let's get started. My name's Lance Crandall. I am a program manager at Microsoft in the Enterprise Client Group. And today we're going to be talking about what's new with Windows 8 BitLocker and the Microsoft BitLocker Administration and Monitoring 2.0 toolkit. So it seems like the last couple of years we've had almost a competition, it seems like, in the enterprise product groups where we're trying to come up with the longest names possible for our products. And you guys have probably noticed this as well. We've got System Center, Virtual Machine Manager, and System Center Configuration Manager. And it's just like, you know, I think we're in like the top three for the longest, most complicated names to say ever. So I'm actually just going to simplify it. I'm going to call it MBAM for the rest of this presentation. And when I reference System Center Configuration Manager, I'll call it CM. So now you know. All right, so the objectives for this session, we're going to go through a lot of the new features that we've added for Windows 8 with BitLocker to make your lives easier. You know, with the advent of so many, you know, mobile devices that we have out there, I think most users have, on average, 3.3 devices that they use. Mobility is becoming really huge. And so being able to protect those devices that are easily lost and stolen is becoming, you know, all the more important. So BitLocker can really help you to protect that. And we're going to talk about some of the new things that we've added in BitLocker to help you. We're going to talk about MBAM 2.0 and a lot of the new features that we added. We added a lot of really great capabilities in 1.0, but you know, from feedback from you and obviously things that we knew we needed to add, we've added a lot of new great things. We'll talk through that. We're also going to talk through how we actually deploy MBAM and the couple of new a new configuration that we have, a new topology that you'll be really excited about. And we'll talk about upgrading from 1.0 to 2.0 as well. And then we're going to talk about what the end user experience is like as well. So for the agenda, we'll start out talking about the new Windows 8 BitLocker features. We'll talk about MBAM, its new features. And then we'll go through standalone and configuration manager mode. Configuration manager topology is the new topology that you can deploy MBAM in. And then we'll go through the MBAM user experience. I'm going to try and save about 10 or 15 minutes at the end for questions. The sessions that we've given in the past, there seem to be quite a few questions, which is great. If you would just mind, wouldn't mind waiting until the end, it'll be a lot easier. They don't have mics set up in these rooms, but they will walk around at the end, and that makes it a lot easier so I don't have to run to the back and try and be able to hear what you're saying. So just wait till the end. I'll make sure to give you some time, and we'll go from there. All right. April 8th, 2014. Raise your hand if you know what the significance is of this date. Got a few people. Not as many as I would have hoped. Raise your hand. That's unfortunate, but this is the date that XP goes end of life. So you have, what, 10 months left to get your organization off of XP, or you have to pay Microsoft a lot of money to get custom support. And as much as we'd love your money, we'd much rather have you be on a more modern platform to take advantage of all the great features that have come since Windows XP. So this is a really important date. If you're not aware of it and you manage clients, please start working towards migrating your clients off XP. So the reason why I bring this up, though, is that as you're migrating from XP to Windows 7 or Windows 8, it's a great opportunity to really think through your encryption solution and is it time to migrate to BitLocker. And actually what we've seen is that a lot of our customers really are taking that evaluation seriously. They own an edition of Windows that comes with BitLocker, and it just makes sense to migrate to that solution. And when you put MBAM on top of that, that's part of the MDOP suite, you also get a lot of value with management and deployment and reporting. So it's a great better together story there. So the point of this is, as you're doing your migration from XP to a more modern OS, please take the opportunity to evaluate it. And at this, you know, the rest of this session is really going to help you understand a lot of the benefits that you can get from BitLocker and from MBAM as well. So why are customers moving to BitLocker as part of this migration? There's a couple things. There's many reasons, but the two that I'm going to call out are cost savings and simplicity. So a little bit about my history. Before I worked for Microsoft, I worked in private enterprise like many of you. I dealt with a lot of different encryption solutions as part of my position. I wasn't in security, but I was part of the client management group. I was an enterprise client architect. And so I deployed a lot of these. I've tried to deal with them in the OS. I've dealt with, you know, a lot of the pains there. And most recently, before I came into this position, I was part of Microsoft Consulting Services, and I was part of a global rollout for a really large customer. Moving them from XP to Windows 7, and they were using a different third-party solution, and it was kind of interesting just to see a lot of the pain that they had to face. So there was constant server upgrades on the background with this particular product. I won't name it, but On the client side, they had about 30 different versions of this particular encryption solution in their environment, and they were always afraid to upgrade it because something would always happen. There'd be some issue with version X, and it was just challenging to manage. And as we tried to migrate to Windows 7, there were some challenges there where, you know, you'd have to try and put filter drivers in your WinPE image to try and update it, you know, to be able to allow it to see the drive during imaging. So, because we really wanted to use like USMT hard links, and most of you are probably familiar with what that is, but essentially as you're doing an upgrade from XP to Windows 7, your data and settings can stay on the machine instead of having to copy up 20 gigs worth of data to the network while that process happens. So third-party solutions make that really, really challenging. And so this company decided to do is move to BitLocker, and that made a lot of sense for them, and it just made the whole process easier. And going forward, it set them up for a lot of success because you don't have to go through all those hoops. You don't have to deal with multiple clients, and this kind of goes along the simplicity side. The management's a lot simpler with BitLocker and with MBAM on top of that. So, you know, most of you guys probably own an edition of Windows that comes with BitLocker. Just makes sense. It comes with the operating system. It's built in. You don't have to deploy a separate client to enable BitLocker and take advantage of all those features. So cost savings, it makes a lot of sense. It's already included with what you have, so and it's definitely enterprise class. So let's talk about some of the improvements that that we put into Windows 8 with BitLocker. So the first thing is we had a couple of pain points that you know we heard from customer feedback about provisioning, and to be fair, there's a lot of provisioning issues that you may have with other third-party encryption solutions as well. It's kind of common across the board. It doesn't matter who you use. And some of those, like the previous one that I worked with before BitLocker, the provisioning process was a manual process where the end user had to actually launch a wizard. There was like 12 to 15 screens they had to click through, really technical information, and it was just kind of like confusing for end users. And so that was one of the problems that they had. Another issue is that you probably are familiar with TPM chips. It's the Trusted Platform Module. That's a hardware chip that's actually on the motherboard of the machine, and it provides an extra layer of security. So we actually store the encryption keys within that TPM chip. So if I pull out that hard drive that's encrypted that was using TPM and I put it in another machine, it instantly goes into recovery and I have to enter a 48-digit key for that to actually be unlocked. So that would be pretty impossible to hack. So provisioning the TPM requires two things. First, it requires that you enable it in the BIOS. And then second, you have to actually take ownership of it within the operating system. So that ownership process takes a reboot. It's kind of challenging there for end users to go through that. And so that was one of the things that we heard as well, is that provisioning this TPM and taking ownership of it is kind of challenging. And lastly, encryption takes a long time. So if you use any encryption product, if you have like a 250, 500 gig hard drive, which is pretty common nowadays, it might take anywhere from like 5 to 10 hours for that to fully encrypt. And that's a long time. So if you're imaging a lot of boxes or you need to get a box out the door quickly, that might not ever happen because it might take a day. So it really just delays you quite a bit. So that's just something to be aware of. So what did we do to actually alleviate some of these issues? The first thing that we did is we got what's called auto-provisioning in Windows 8. So what that does is it helps out with the TPM provisioning. And I want to be kind of clear that when I first heard about this, I was like, yes, it solved all of our TPM problems. And it does help one aspect of it, but the first aspect that I mentioned is that you have to actually turn on the TPM in your BIOS first. So auto-provisioning helps you with taking ownership of the TPM in the operating system, but you have to have it on in your BIOS first. And there's a lot of tools that you can use that come from the vendors. If you use Dell, if you use HP, Lenovo, that you can use to automate that process. But it's not something that Windows 8 is going to help you with. It's kind of outside of Windows 8's purview. But auto provisioning, when you log into your machine, a Windows 8 machine, if ownership isn't taken, then it can take ownership. And it'll do that automatically, and it'll do it without a reboot. So that kind of solves one of the problems there, that it's an automated process. It'll back up the TPM information to Active Directory, and then it doesn't require the reboot. So that's really helpful for end users. I do want to make one note here about MBAM. I realize we haven't talked about MBAM yet, but this is kind of a good spot to talk about it, is that while auto-provisioning can really help you with getting that information into Active Directory, a lot of people want to use MBAM for TPM recovery as well. So if you're in your pre-boot screen, you type in your PIN wrong a bunch of times, depending on the vendor, let's say it's 10, 15 times, it just varies by vendor, it'll lock you out of that machine and put you into recovery. So you actually have to go reset that TPM to get it back to that clean state. And when you do that, You can either go into Active Directory if you let Windows 8 provision it and grab that TPM password file to do the unlock on the machine, or you can go to MBAM and do it. So you kind of have to make a decision when you use auto-provisioning if you want to use it or not, or if you want MBAM to actually own the TPM and back up the TPM information to MBAM. So you kind of have the recovery in one place. There's pros and cons to both, and it just kind of depends on what you want to do. We have customers that do both, so it just depends on how you want to handle that. There's a new type of hard drive out as well that many of you may have seen. It's fairly new, so you may not have heard about it. It's called an encrypted hard drive. And an encrypted hard drive does the encryption on the actual hard drive. So instead of having the software do it, you have instant on protection with an encrypted hard drive. So it has a storage controller that handles all the encryption. And then BitLocker on top of that can turn on different protectors. So you could still have the TPM protector or TPM plus PIN for those pre-boot authentication methods, and that will just go on top of the encryption that already happens. So that way you don't have a chance to have the encryption not on any of your data. So it'll protect all of your data kind of right out of the gate. So that kind of goes with the encryption time where it can take too much time. With this, it's offloaded to the hardware at the hardware level, and so you don't have to worry about performance or times where your software or where your data may not be encrypted. If you have a traditional storage device where you don't have an encrypted hard drive, we can still add a lot of value. How many of you have heard of pre-provisioning before with BitLocker? Got a few people. So what pre-provisioning, this is really cool. So if you get new hardware and you want to put your operating system on it, you probably use MDT or something to that effect to be able to deploy your image. And as you do that, there's a step in there that's already in an MDT task sequence called enable BitLocker offline. And what happens is before you actually lay down any bits on that clean hard drive, you can turn on this enable BitLocker offline, and from WinPE, it will enable BitLocker using use disk space only encryption. And so since there's no data on that drive, it's instantly encrypted. So as you're laying down the operating system, it encrypts on the fly, and so you're always encrypted right out of the gate. And if you think about it, that's a huge selling point for your security organization where there's never a chance where a new machine gets handed to an end user where it's not encrypted. That's pretty awesome. And it's fast, so you don't have to wait that 5-10 hours for it to happen because it's just during your imaging process. It doesn't really have too much of a performance impact on that, and you're good to go out of the gate. So that's pretty cool. One thing to say about that, too, is you actually can do that with Windows 7, too. It's all part of the ADK. So as long as you can use the ADK, depending on what versions of MDT or Configuration Manager you're using, you can get that benefit with Windows 7 as well on new devices. And that goes along with the parallel imaging there. All right, so what are some other things that we've added in Windows 8 to improve the experience for IT and end users? There's a new type of device. It's pretty common on tablets now, the Windows 8 certified tablets. It's called Connected Standby. And what Connected Standby is, it has a particular hardware standard that won't allow direct access memory ports. So you kind of think about your these types of devices, you kind of think about your mobile phone. So, you know, I can hit the button on the top, it turns it off, but it's not really off. I can still get email, I'm still getting background notifications, those sorts of things. When I click it, it's instantly turned on. You know, there's no waiting, it's not booting up, but it kind of is in a power save mode when it's off. And that's similar to these. So if any of you have purchased your, you know, a Surface RT device, for example, that's a connected standby device. You know, you kind of get the instant on by hitting that button, but you're in your full operating system as opposed to, you know, waiting for Windows to boot, for example. So to understand, like, pre-boot authentication, some of the reasons for that was that there was a couple of kinds of attacks that it was preventing. So the first attack is one that can happen over a direct memory access port, which is like a FireWire port. Most of your devices probably don't have FireWire ports anymore, so that's not really an impact, but you could kind of plug a device into it and get the keys out of memory. And so you can prevent that by having a pre-boot, you know, PIN or password, for example. With a connected standby devices, you can't have that type of a port, and so that attack vector no longer exists. The second type of attack that you could have, and again, this is with any encryption solution, is it's what's called a cold boot attack. And so, like, there's some videos, but it's pretty challenging to ever pull this off in real life, but you kind of, like, pull the memory out really fast, and you spray it with Freon, and you try and, like, pull the keys off of it. So it's pretty challenging to make that happen. But with connected standby devices, the memory is actually soldered into the motherboard, and so you couldn't ever pull it out anyway. So there's really no need with these types of devices to even have pre-boot authentication, and that just kind of makes the end user experience a little bit better. So I don't have to log in pre-boot, and I don't have to log into Windows as well. On Windows 8 as well, on Windows 8 certified devices, there's what's called Secure Boot, which is, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on that, but with that and some of the changes that we made to BitLocker, we made it a lot easier, or a lot fewer opportunities for you to go into recovery. So, you know, for example, on Windows 7, if you had BitLocker installed and you needed to change your boot order, for example, in your BIOS or change a BIOS setting, it would almost always send you into recovery if you hadn't suspended BitLocker first from within the operating system. And now that kind of stuff doesn't really happen with UEFI and Secure Boot. So there's a lot fewer opportunities where you're going to be getting calls from users saying, hey, for some reason my machine went into recovery. You know, they still may forget their PIN if you were using pre-boot authentication, but if you're not, great. There's always-on encryption with Windows RT devices, where if you log into a device, encryption begins automatically as soon as your Microsoft account can contact SkyDrive and save your key up there. And so, you know, it's just less opportunities for you to have data that is on your device that's unprotected. And then, you know, we talked about the TPM provisioning already and how that is really beneficial to allow the auto-provisioning so you don't have to do an automatic reboot. Just easier for end users to have that provisioned. Another thing that we added is in the Windows logon screen, if you can set a group policy that says, hey, after 20 invalid attempts or 10 invalid attempts in this amount of time, we're going to reboot your machine and put it into a recovery mode. And so that's kind of some anti-hammering logic that we put in there with Windows 8 that also protects the Windows logon screen as well from brute force attacks, which is pretty cool. In Windows 7, you could also... if you were an administrator, you could go into the BitLocker control panel and suspend protection. Let's say you had a valid reason. I needed to change the boot order for some reason in the BIOS, so I want to suspend protection first so I don't go into that recovery scenario when I reboot. But sometimes people just forgot to turn it back on, and it wasn't anything intentional. They just forgot. So with Windows 8, when you reboot after you've suspended, it will automatically resume protection for you. Now with MBAM, we've actually extended that protection to that benefit back to Windows 7 as well. So with MBAM 2.0, if you install that, if someone's also suspended their protection there and they reboot, then it will automatically resume that as well. Then lastly, for non-domain join devices, if you have a bring your own device type scenario, you can enforce encryption, BitLocker encryption as well on those devices through Exchange ActiveSync. As far as what we've done is for enterprise readiness with BitLocker in Windows 8, we now support SANs. We support Windows clusters. And if you think about it, like another benefit is that we have what's called a network protector. So a network protector uses a special like WDS server on the back end to be able to do authentication. And then what happens is, let's say I have a server that has a PIN on it, so a pre-boot PIN. You know, we may be patching our servers, and then we reboot those servers. So it's going to be sitting at this pre-boot screen, not booting into Windows, it's waiting for us to actually enter something. So that's a really bad situation for us to be in as server admins. We don't want to have to like go log into 50 servers and type in the PIN to get into that. And so with the network protector, as that machine boots up, it uses DHCP extensions to contact this WDS server, the special WDS server that works with this network protector, and it'll automatically do authentication and make sure that it'll automatically unlock, essentially, so that you don't have to worry about typing in that PIN. So that really simplifies patching. All right, and that's pretty much it with what's new in BitLocker and Windows 8. We have a lot of really great features, as you saw, to make your environment more secure, make it easier to provision. So where does MBAM fit into this? MBAM is part of the MDOP suite. So if you own SA, you can also purchase MDOP. MDOP is a suite of products that has like AppV in it, which is application virtualization. It has user experience virtualization. There's been a bunch of sessions about both of those products here. And also Dart, which is a great toolkit to be able to do diagnostics on your machine and fix issues that you may have. So it's a great tool. It's part of that. If you already, how many of you own MDOP already? Quite a few. That's great. That's great. So if you own it and you haven't implemented this, this comes with it. That's great. How many of you have actually implemented MBAM 1.0? Okay, so a few. So it looks like there's about a quarter of the room is kind of familiar with what MBAM does. So we'll get into more detail to kind of help you understand what are the benefits of MBAM. Why would I want to use this with BitLocker as well? So what is MBAM? MBAM is a management layer on top of BitLocker. So BitLocker, as you saw, has a lot of really great features, but it doesn't really have enterprise management capabilities outside of storing things in Active Directory. So let's say we're just using BitLocker by itself. With that by itself, it'll store information in Active Directory, the recovery information, but anyone pretty much has access to that information. So I could go get the CEO's key and unlock his machine if I had physical access to it. There's no auditing around that. That's not really that helpful. And also, if I set protectors like TPM plus PIN, so I have a pre-boot PIN, I want to be able to easily provision that to my end users without IT staff having to go and actually help them set up a PIN for the first time. So those are some of the things that BitLocker didn't really do well. And so MBAM adds on top of that to be able to simplify all that. So with MBAM 1.0, what did we really want to do? We wanted to make that process easier. We wanted to provide users with a wizard, for example, when they log in to the machine for the first time after you've imaged it, to be able to say, hey, you need to enter a PIN to be compliant with our security policies. So we'll pop up a simple wizard, they enter their PIN, and then they're all set. Then encryption can begin if it didn't already happen on the machine, if you had existing machines, for example. So that was a really great benefit that a lot of people really wanted. The second thing we wanted to provide with MBAM 1.0 was reporting. So in your organizations, if a laptop is lost that was encrypted, well, you want to know if it's encrypted so that your compliance department's going to ask you, you know, can you tell us when the last time was that machine reported in? Does it meet our security standards as far as encryption? Do we need to actually report this? I mean, you've probably seen a lot of things in the news where, you know, some government organization or some company lost a laptop that had a lot of, you know, personally identifiable information on it. It may have had social security numbers or credit card information or something like that, and they had to report that to the media. So you want to avoid that. You don't want your companies to be in the news for things like that. So this is one of the ways that you can prevent that, because you can tell your compliance department, hey, I was encrypted when that laptop was stolen, so we don't really need to worry about it. The last thing we want to do was help you with recovery. So instead of going to Active Directory to try and get that information, we want you to go to a simple portal that your help desk can use to help your end users get out of those recovery events. And that'll help to reduce your costs. So MBAM really provided, 1.0 provided a lot of really great benefits to help you manage BitLocker, but we really wanted to do more. So what did we do in 2.0 to add more value? The first thing that we did is that we improved compliance and security. So we talked about those situations where an admin can go in and suspend BitLocker protection, and they may just forget to go back in. So if they're on Windows 7, we wanted to be able to help them as well to be able to resume protection automatically. The other thing that we did is if you have, we improved kind of the compliance calculation that we do to see if you're really compliant. And what we did there is, for example, in MBAM 1.0, let's say your policy said that you had to have a TPM protector on your machine. And then you said, well, I actually want to have TPM plus PIN. I really like having that pre-boot authentication. And so you added that. Well, in 1.0, we would actually say you weren't compliant because you had to match that exact policy, even though technically you were more secure. And so with 2.0, we will give you that deployment flexibility to be able to say, hey, you want to be more secure? That's great. You'll still be compliant. We'll just enforce the minimum bar. The other thing that we heard is that, hey, we've got this System Center configuration manager environment that we've already spun up. It's rolled out everywhere. We really want to use that as our single pane of glass. We want to be able to enforce compliance through that. We want to be able to see reports and those sorts of things to take advantage of that for scalability. And so we heard that, and we've helped you with that integration. We'll talk about that a little bit more in detail. And the last thing that we heard is that a lot of your organizations are really trying to move towards a self-service model in general for your IT organizations to save costs. You know, whether that's with application delivery, where they can go to like the System Center application catalog and pull down applications that they need without having to contact an IT professional or your help desk to pull that down for them. We're doing the same thing with BitLocker. So if you need to recover your machine, you can log into someone else's machine if you were locked out of that, and you can create your recovery key and get out of that recovery situation. So those are just a few of the things that we've done in 2.0, and we'll talk about all these things in far more detail through the rest of the presentation. So as far as the release pillars that we had, we really wanted to focus on configuration manager integration. And what we do here is we provide reporting, so all your compliance reporting will happen through there. And you can also just use all the power that you have in Configuration Manager today to target which groups of users you want to actually have BitLocker enforced. So let's say you have machines in China and you don't want them to, you know, be able to have BitLocker due to like the legality in that country. So you can choose not to target those particular machines for compliance. So you have all the flexibility for hardware. Maybe there's specific machine types that you don't want to have targeted as well. It's completely in your control. We'll give a great demo on this as we go along to kind of show what that is. But the thing to know about this is that the recovery information, so as you've encrypted, you have a recovery key, that information is still stored in a separate database. It's not stored in the Configuration Manager database. So the Configuration Manager integration really helps you with the ongoing compliance reporting and can give you that reporting within Configuration Manager using the reporting services point. With Windows 8 support, we've obviously added Windows 8 as a client that we support. We've also added Windows to Go support. So Windows to Go can't use a TPM because you're moving it into multiple different machines. And you know, in a normal situation, that if you were using TPM, that would put you into recovery every time you moved to a different machine. So it didn't really make sense. So we've added a password protector, which is a pre-boot protector for the Windows to Go devices. And you can use those with non-TPM with Windows 8. So if you don't have TPM, you can use this as well. It doesn't have to be Windows to Go, just something to be aware of. With self-service, you have a simple web portal that a user can walk into. We store their information when they log into a machine to say, hey, Lance logged into XYZ machine, and so he's able to do recovery on that particular machine. So we use Windows Integrated Authentication, which you'll see in a demo that we'll do shortly, to validate that that user has rights to do the recovery. And lastly, we heard a lot of customer feedback in a lot of different areas. Some of it was around performance. We wanted to be able to make deployments easier for you. We didn't want you to have to pull up 5 different servers to implement MBAM. And we also had some other concerns that we heard about requiring like SQL Enterprise, for example. So you know, that's a kind of a huge cost there, and we're just storing information. So we've made some changes there that will help to address that so that you can actually use SQL Standard now to deploy MBAM. All right, so when you're deploying MBAM, you have 2 different options. The first option is standalone mode. And if you've deployed MBAM 1.0, it's similar to that. So it's all on, you have a web server that hosts your web components, so like your help desk portal and self-service portal. And then you can have a SQL server that hosts, that stores your recovery information as well as your compliance data. So that's kind of the model that we have for standalone mode. For Configuration Manager integrated mode, again, we have all of the compliance data that's now stored via using the Config Manager agent, kicks up that data to Configuration Manager, and you can view that all in there. And it also gives you all of that targeting information that we talked about before. The recovery information, again, is separate. It's not stored in the Configuration Manager. It's still stored in a separate database. And we'll talk about kind of how you can deploy these in a minute. Yes. Yep, we'll go over the supported configs in a minute, but the question was, is it supported with CM2007 as well? And the answer is yes. So we talked about some improvements that we wanted to make to the deployment story, and a lot of that goes with performance and scalability. So if you looked at MBAM 1.0, there was a white paper that talked about like scalability, and it was almost shocking to me just with how much we were trying to, you know, if you had 100,000 clients or something, it was like this 5 server infrastructure. You know, you were installing all the different components on different servers. You had like 48 gigs of RAM or something like that. I mean, we're just storing like a little bit of information, right, about like recovery, the recovery key and compliance. So why did we need so much? So we made a ton of improvements here, and we've really, really simplified it. Technically, you could install it on one box, but we highly recommend you install it on 2, and most of that's just for security. It's not necessarily for performance. So, I mean, the amount of resources that you need to install us is simple. And so that's one of the things that we really wanted to focus on. Again, for the flexibility, you can deploy it on SQL Standard. You don't need SQL Enterprise anymore. That was a huge blocker for smaller organizations that didn't, they wanted to take advantage of this but didn't want to spend a lot of money on SQL Enterprise. So TDE is an encryption technology that's within SQL, and all it does is just encrypt the actual database file. So it's not the data within the database, it's the file itself. So if someone went and grabbed the MDF file, for example, that would be encrypted. So you can still use that, and it's up to you whether you want that level of security or not for your organization. And if you do, that's great. We'll support it. If you don't want to use it, that's totally fine. We'll support that as well. SPNs. During MBAM 1.0, during the setup, we were trying to set up SPNs, and those are just kind of like DNS for Kerberos. So to have that Kerberos authentication, you had to set up these SPNs. But the problem was that with MBAM 1.0, you almost had to have a domain admin run that installation to be able to have the rights to create those on the back end. So now you can just send off the information to your Active Directory domain admin, and he can create those in advance, and then you can walk through the installation on your own at your leisure. And lastly, we've improved availability where we have a new VSS writer where SQL backup solutions can plug into that and back up your SQL database without affecting your availability. All right, so in standalone mode, what operating systems do we support? First of all, we're shipping a 64-bit only version, so you have to use a 64-bit OS. So for Windows Server 2008 R2, we can use that. We also support Windows 8, obviously. But we've added support, obviously, for Server 2012, for Windows 8, and for SQL 2012, essentially, on the standalone side. On the configuration manager side, we support CM 2007 and 2012. The important point to note on Configuration Manager 2007 is that it requires a 64-bit OS and 64-bit SQL, because again, we're only shipping 64-bit components. So if your CM environment, which is 32-bit, is running on a 32-bit server or with 32-bit SQL, then you're going to have a problem. So it'll only integrate if it's 64-bit. As far as hardware configurations, you can have it on one box due to the performance improvements that we had. You could put CM on the same box, you could have MBAM on the same box, all the components on the same box, but we kind of only recommend that for a lab scenario. It doesn't mean that it's not going to work, it'll probably work just fine, and it just depends on the size of your organization. If you have 1,000 users, it's not a big deal. You can put it on the same box if you want. If you have 100,000 users, you know, you definitely want to think about that, and we definitely recommend a two-box scenario. The other reason why we recommend two-box for standalone is because generally, your IIS, your web team, and your SQL team are separate. It decreases the attack vectors. It's more just kind of for security, and it's just a best practice kind of to have those components on separate servers. But again, there's nothing stopping you from putting it on one server and having it work just fine. The two-box scenario, we can definitely support at least 200,000 clients. At Microsoft, we have an internal IT organization called MSIT, Microsoft IT, and they've been running this for at least 6 months now on two boxes. With the specs listed here, no issues, and so it definitely scales very well. For CM integrated, it can support up to whatever CM really supports. We say 200,000 here, but if you have a larger environment, it can definitely support whatever CM supports because we just scale with CM. We recommend three servers, so you'd have your CM box that you install it on that already exists, and then you'd have your web and SQL components that we need for the recovery information and the help desk portals on separate boxes as well. Again, you can combine those. You can put all the roles on separate boxes. It's really, really flexible on how you set it up. So you can make it as simple or as complex as you'd like. So I'm just going to build out this standalone architecture slide because it just makes it easier for me to talk through. So give me a second here to click 15 times. Okay. So what does a standalone architecture really look like? So first on the left, you'll see that we require Active Directory. And we do that because we really need group policy. And so group policy will apply to your client machine that you've installed the MBAM agent on. And the MBAM agent will then enforce the policies that you've set in your group policy. So before we ever encrypt, we actually make sure that we can contact the MBAM server that you've set up and that we can escrow the key, because we definitely don't want to get you in a situation where you weren't able to recover if a machine got lost, but we'd encrypted it anyway. So that's kind of a good prereq for you. It's a good safeguard to make sure that doesn't ever happen. You can definitely deploy the MBAM agent in advance of doing anything else. It's not going to do anything until a policy actually applies to that machine, a BitLocker or MBAM policy. And so you can definitely stage it however you'd like. We have two different portals that we have. We have the help desk portal and the self-service portal. The help desk portal is where your end users or where your help desk is going to go to actually do recovery, and they can also view reports there to check compliance. The self-service portal is obviously pretty self-explanatory there. That's where your end users can go on their own to do their own recovery. All these services, the help desk, the agent, these web services, those get installed as part of our installation. And then they talk to the databases. So we have the recovery database, which holds all your recovery keys. And then you also have the audit and compliance database, which holds all the compliance information to say, yep, I was compliant. These are the policies I had applied for BitLocker or that I had enabled. And this is the last time I checked in. And then lastly, we have the compliance report, which rely on SQL Server reporting services as well. So that's just part of the SQL install that you'll have. All right, let's jump into our first demo here. switched over. All right, so we're not going to walk through the installation at all. It's honestly pretty self-explanatory as you go through it. You just have to make sure you have all the prereqs in place. If you have IIS configured according to our documentation, you have SQL configured, your SPN's created, you're in good shape. It's just click next kind of a thing. So this is kind of the end result when you install standalone. This is the help desk portal here. The first thing you're going to see are the reports. So this report right here is the enterprise compliance report. So this is going to give you a kind of a dashboard view of your entire organization. So you can see over here that you'll have, you know, non-compliant machines. We have 26% of our machines aren't compliant. I've also got like user exempt machines. I can also see kind of the overview here that I have 200 total computers. This is how many are compliant. This is what isn't. So this is a great view for your security team to be able to come in here and kind of see, hey, how are we doing as far as encryption? Are we doing good, bad, or you know, is there work that we need to do? And down here you can see individual information about a machine at a glance. So you can see that this particular machine is not compliant, and this was the last time that it checked in. Now, as I drill down here, don't try and pay too much attention to the information because, and try and piece it together and say, well, wait, it shows non-compliant here, but the machine shows compliant. We have a test tool that we use to actually inject data into our system that just kind of pulls up these different reports. So it's all garbage data. It's not going to make any sense to you. So don't try and like figure it out and raise your hand and say that, wait, these calculations aren't correct because it's just fake data we put in there. So as I can click on a particular device, let's see why client one's non-compliant, for example. So if I click on that, it's going to pull up the computer compliance report. And under that, I can see that I'm not compliant. So if I expand this client one here, it decides that it's already run. So let's try that again. So while that pulls up, the report expired since I already had it up, so we'll just rerun that. But if we type in our client one here, all right, so here what we can see is that, you know, we get just basic information you'd expect about which operating system it's on, its overall compliance status, what policies are required. So you can see I require 128-bit encryption and so forth. Down here I can get more information about individual drives. So here I can see I have my operating system drive. It's actually got BitLocker on and it's encrypted. And so that particular drive shows compliant. But then I have two fixed disks, which, again, a fixed disk is just a volume that's on my existing hard drive. And I have an E and an F drive, and those are not compliant. So, you know, again, ignore the data here that says it's encrypted, but it's showing that those, you know, wouldn't be encrypted. So that was why my overall status would show me as non-compliant. So so that's kind of the level of detail that you can get. You can go in and say, okay, well, we need to make sure that these particular machines are encrypted. You can, you know, have your company snipers go out there and, like, you know, give them a hard time about getting compliant if they're not compliant. And this just kind of provides you with the information that you need. So if I lost a machine, I would come to the computer compliance report. I'd type in that device ID and try and get a status to say, yes, it was encrypted. You know, I'd get the date that it happened and find out that the last contact date was, looks like 2 days ago. So that may be sufficient for my compliance organization to say, yep, we're good, we don't need to worry about it. So what about drive recovery? So I have a user that gets locked out of their machine. It's showing them that they're in recovery. What do I need to do there to get them unlocked? So the user in this scenario would call the help desk, and then we'd enter their information here. So you can control the level of or who has access to this through some local groups, which I won't show, but you have help desk users, you have advanced help desk users, and you just put them into these local groups, and that will give them the rights to either look at reports or do this type of recovery. So let's actually do a recovery here. So I have a client here, a Windows 8 client, and this is the pre-boot screen. So this is a non-TPM machine, so I've applied a password protector, and you know, I can't remember what my password is. I set this up a couple months ago. I really don't know what it is. So let's go into the recovery mode here. And so when a user calls their help desk and they hit escape to go into recovery, you'll see that there's these first 8 characters here. And this is what we need to actually pull back their recovery key. So the end user would tell your help desk person it's 55D, whatever, and we go from there. So if I type it in here, I have a couple reasons as well that I can say here. So I lost my passphrase. I don't remember what it is. This can give you some insights into, you know, what sorts of recovery events are happening pretty regularly. Are people just forgetting their pre-boot PIN all the time, or what's the situation here? So as we wait for our key to pull back here, while I wait for that, I'll just talk about managed TPM. Well, we'll get this. All right. So if I copy and I come back here, so your help desk person would read back this ginormous key, end user puts it in, and then I'm able to get into my machine. So if I forgot my PIN, I could actually go in at this point and reset that. The other option you have in here is managed TPM. So this is what we talked about at the beginning with TPM provisioning. So if I was in that pre-boot screen and I mismatched my password 10 times or 15 times, I could get locked out, and I can come in here and recover that for somebody to help them reset that TPM. So we won't do that for this demo, but that's what that step is. So that's kind of what standalone mode looks like in the end. So we'll get more into the client side of it at our last demo, but for now, that's kind of what a help desk and recovery and reporting experience looks like. All right, switch back over here. Okay, so with the configuration manager integrated architecture, what's the difference here? So the difference is we're obviously using Configuration Manager for the compliance data, and we're using it for reporting as well. So you can see on the left that we have the Configuration Manager agent that's now installed on the machine as well. That's just part of your normal deployment process for Configuration Manager. But you still need the MBAM client to be able to help you out with generating compliance, because it has all the smarts to do that. And then the Configuration Manager agent will actually kick up the information to Configuration Manager as well. So let's see what that looks like. All right, so if we jump back over to our demo here, I have a System Center 2012 environment here. And one of the first things that we install is this MBAM supported computers collection. So this is an object that we create, and it has a kind of a default query in here that you can use to say, these are the types of machines in your environment that have reported in that are kind of BitLocker capable. So, you know, we'll check to say, hey, if you're on Windows 7, do you have TPM 1.2 or above, which is a requirement for BitLocker, or not? And if not, then you don't show up in this collection. Since it's System Center, this is just a starting point. You can do whatever you want. If you want to limit it more and say, hey, we like that initial query that you have, but we really want to limit it down to this OU. Okay, well, that's great. Just go in and edit the collection or create a new collection, and you're good to go. The compliance information that gets into Configuration Manager happens because we also create 2 configuration items here. So you can see we have one for fixed data drives, and we also have one for the operating system drive. And those are part of this BitLocker protection baseline, both of those configuration items. And those get deployed to the MBAM supported computers collection. And so any machine that's in that collection will have these evaluated just like your normal configuration item or configuration baseline processes that occur, and then it will send up the data to Configuration Manager for querying. So as far as the reports, if you go under the monitoring node, reporting, reports, there's a new MBAM folder that we create, and you'll see that we have 4 different reports in here now that are MBAM specific. So this kind of gives you, again, that single pane of glass for all of your information that Configuration Manager gathers, as well as for your compliance data. So if you pull up these reports, we have a couple of new reports that aren't in standalone. So this one's a dashboard that we've created for Configuration Manager specifically. Whoops. So you can see kind of a graph here of compliant, non-compliant, and you can actually drill down on any of these sections of the pie as well to be able to get more information about, hey, which of these 20 or 50 machines are non-compliant, so I could drill down and figure that out. You can also see more detailed information about why it may have failed. So there could have been errors like that they couldn't enable the TPM for some reason, or there was a conflict or something to that effect. So here you can see what sort of errors you're getting and be able to help troubleshoot that to get your compliance level up. And we also have another graph here that will show kind of a distribution of, like, as far as your operating system drives, you know, we have this many that are compliant, these that aren't compliant, and same with your fixed data drives. So that's just kind of a dashboard view. This view is similar to the other view that we showed in standalone mode, which will show kind of your overall compliance status here. So you can see, you know, I have 132 config manager agents that are reporting in. I'm this compliant. And again, you have the ability to drill down here as well. As far as computer compliance report, if I drill down, then I can also see information about a particular machine. I can see that, you know, with this one, I've got it encrypted with TPM and PIN, for example. So you can see the state, you can see its encryption level, and this is how your compliance team or security team would get information about a particular machine. And this one, again, is just more enterprise level, so it'll show you all the machines in your organization. Again, pardon the data here, it's not accurate at all. It's just our test data, so similar information. So that's kind of the gist of the Configuration Manager view. You have all the flexibility of Configuration Manager to not only deploy your client, but also deal with your with the compliance side of it as well. And we scale with Configuration Manager. That's what's great there. So if you have 400,000 clients or something, no problem. If your Config Manager infrastructure supports that, we work just fine. All right. So how do I upgrade from 1.0 to 2.0? It's a pretty simple process. You uninstall 1.0 and you install 2.0. That's pretty much it. The only thing that you need to be aware of is that you need to make sure that you point the 2.0 installation at the exact same database names that you already had. So as we uninstall 1.0, we don't delete your databases. That would be horrible because you'd lose all of your keys, all of your compliance data, and that just wouldn't be good. So we leave that there. You just need to make sure that your 2.0 installation just points at the exact same databases and you don't lose any data whatsoever. If you're going standalone to standalone, it's exactly what I said. If you go standalone to Configuration Manager mode, then you need to be a little bit careful because not really careful, but you just need to be aware of what's happening. Because all the compliance data is now going to be in Configuration Manager, but we don't do any sort of migration from your existing compliance data into Configuration Manager. So you have to wait for all of your clients to essentially report in to Configuration Manager before you'll have all that data. Now, in the meantime, if you lose a machine that hasn't reported in yet, you have to look at your NBAM 1.0 database, your existing database that you have, and be able to tell if it's compliant or not. So that's just a consideration there if you're going standalone to Config Manager. Now, if you don't have 1.0 in your environment at all, which it looked like a lot of you didn't, then this is a non-issue. Configuration Manager, you'll just install in ConfigMan mode, integrated mode, and wait for all of your clients to check in like they normally would, and then you'll have your compliance data as you go. So the process at a high level is that you update your servers first. So you go 1.0 to 2.0, just doing the uninstall, reinstall. You'll update group policy. You want to, you know, we have a couple of new policies, like, for example, the non-TPM policy. So if you already had 1.0 policies, go double check your 2.0 policies and make sure that those are correct and accurate. And then you can deploy the agent after that. Now, if you have existing 1.0 agents and you've upgraded your server back in to 2.0, those 1.0 agents are going to continue to report into your 2.0 environment just fine. It's just that they don't take advantage of some of those new 2.0 features. If you're going to Config Manager mode, we definitely need that 2.0 agent out there before they're going to start reporting in. And that's pretty important to note as well. So with any upgrade, you know, you always have to plan it out in advance. You want to test it out in your lab, make sure everything worked the way you expected it to. Same with group policy. You know, we're making a couple of policy changes. So there's a possibility when you upgrade that 1.0 to 2.0 client that an existing client that was compliant before now needs to make some sort of a change. And so they could get a prompt of some kind saying, hey, now you need a PIN, for example. So in that scenario, you just want to make sure you've tested it out, you've informed your users, they might get a prompt to become compliant if they weren't before. So just test all that out in advance. You know, we've already talked about the importance of making sure that in Config Manager mode, it's going to take a little bit of time for that information to populate, so just be aware of that. And that's pretty much it for upgrading. It's pretty simple. Again, it's uninstall, reinstall. That's pretty much it for 1.0 to 2.0. If it's 2.0, great. Just install it, make sure you have all the prereqs, and it's a pretty simple thing. You don't have to plan like this big 6-month project like you do with some other products to be able to get this in place. So kind of like we talked about, we want to make sure that BitLocker and MBAM are go hand in hand and that they're really easy to install and manage. So what does it look like for an end user? What do they see? So first of all, you have to deploy the MBAM agent to the machines. So even if you're in Config Manager integrated mode, you still need to have that MBAM agent because it has all the smarts to tell if you're compliant or not and be able to report all that information and also do the policy enforcement. So you want to be able to get BitLocker enabled on your machine. And so that's one of the key components of that. So that's pretty much all of that it does. We also, during installation of the client, we add a BitLocker or an MBAM UI in the control panel. And the reason we did that is because in Windows 7, if you weren't an administrator, you didn't have the ability to change your PIN. And that's kind of a problem if I like go into a recovery event because I forgot my PIN, and then I have no ability to change it as a standard user. So you know, it would mean that an IT admin would have to go log into the machine and then help you change it, and that's just a lot of overhead. So we added this UI where a standard user can go to this control panel applet, and in Windows 7 they can do it, make that PIN change themselves. Now in Windows 8, there's been some enhancements there as well, where a standard user can change their PIN. So that's kind of a good enhancement there, but for Windows 7 we still need to support that, so that UI still exists. One of the things that we talked about at the beginning was pre-provisioning, and how that's really cool because if you have that clean machine, it doesn't take 5-10 hours to encrypt. You encrypt as you go. And what happens is as that process happens, the protector that it puts down is what's called a clear protector. So you're encrypted, but it's not active. So if you actually didn't have MBAM installed, you would have to go into the control panel for BitLocker, and you'd see something that said waiting for activation, and then you would have to activate that, and it would apply, you know, like a TPM protector or whatever protectors you had set for your environment. So MBAM, during your imaging process, if you install the operating system, you pre-provision, install the operating system, and install the MBAM agent, then MBAM will detect that it's in this waiting for activation state, and then it'll kick in and apply all the protectors automatically, so you don't have to worry about it. So we really complement that and make a good story there, start to finish for imaging. And then we also, again, added for Windows 7 the ability for the agent to detect that you're in suspended state, and that will enable that in the end to kind of always try and keep you as compliant and secure as possible. So as I mentioned earlier, with MBAM 1.0, we would enforce this, whatever policies you set in your GPO, but if you wanted to be more secure and set additional protectors, we'd say, sorry, you're not compliant. So we've given you that ability now where end users, assuming your policy allows it, you can add different protectors as well. And then we have if you're trying to determine why you're not compliant, we have a new WMI class that you could query to be able to determine if you're compliant, why you're not compliant. We've improved the flow as well for the client. So we'll show in a minute kind of the wizard that comes up to help you enforce encryption on your end user machines. And before it was kind of an all-at-once thing. So if I had like an operating system drive and multiple fixed disk drives, it would try and encrypt everything kind of all at once. And it was kind of unclear to the end users like what exactly was going on. And so we've kind of cleaned that up, made it a lot more user-friendly. We'll encrypt one volume at a time. We'll tell you exactly which volume we're doing. The messages are a lot clearer, so it's really a good, really good end-user experience. And lastly, we added Windows to Go support, where if I plug a device in that's encrypted, I'll have a password protector now that's kind of similar. You know, we just saw that on my other box, the VM that we did in the demo, that you can type in that password and you'll be good to go. All right. So the question is, in Windows 7 or Windows 8, do you encrypt all partitions or all volumes on the machine? And the answer is, it depends on your organization. My recommendation would be that, yes, you would do that, because BitLocker is full volume encryption. It's not full disk encryption. So you have to actually encrypt each volume that has data on it or could have data on it to protect it. And so enabling your fixed disk drive policies in group policy will make sure that you're fully protected. Switch over to the demo here. All right, so on this client, let's make this a little bigger. So there's a Windows 8 client. And you'll see here that I have a C drive, an E drive, and an F drive. So the C drive is my operating system drive. And now you see I already got a prompt. So we'll explain the prompt in a second. The little lock here means that it's BitLocker encrypted. And when it's unlocked like this, that means that I passed through the protector that was on there. In this case, it was the password protector. So my drive's unlocked. I have access to the data. It's not, it's encrypted, but not. It's visible at this point. If it's locked, I can't even get into it without entering the password. And then I have another drive here, a fixed disk drive, that's not encrypted at all. So you can see what happened here is that I have a fixed disk drive group policy that says that I need to be encrypted, and I have a fixed disk drive that's not encrypted at all. So BitLocker, the MBAM agent, detected that and says, hey, you have an F drive here that isn't encrypted, and you need to be encrypted. So I have a couple of options. I can postpone it if it's not convenient because I'm in the middle of my presentation right now, or I can start it, and I can choose to enter a password for that fixed disk drive. And so this is similar if you have pre-boot authentication that you want for like a TPM and PIN scenario. Instead of having your IT staff have to walk up and help out the end user in the end with setting that PIN, MBAM itself is going to say, hey, you have a TPM and PIN protector that is required by your organization, but you don't have it set yet. And so this kind of a wizard will pop up for them. It's pretty, again, straightforward here. Set a PIN. So they just enter a PIN and hit go, and they're good to go. So I won't actually do the encryption right now, but that's kind of what the wizard looks like. So it's just kind of simple steps that an end user can walk through. It's not the 12 steps that we talked about before for some of these other encryption products, so it's a lot more straightforward and user-friendly and way less technical. So so let's say I want to get into this fixed disk drive. So it's prompting me for a password. And again, I'm really nervous about my demo here, my presentation, and I can't remember what it is. That's a serious problem. So you'll notice this keeps popping up. And the reason it's popping up is because I've lowered the time that it wakes up to check and make sure I'm compliant to 1 minute just for demo purposes. You probably don't want to do that in your production environment because it kind of always be checking even if you were compliant. So, usually by default it's set to 90 minutes. So I'm just going to leave this up for now because I just don't want it to keep popping up. So if I double click this, I go to more options. I say enter recovery key because I just can't remember what it is. So it's similar to that pre-boot thing where it shows me the first 8 characters of the key ID. So this is what I need. Let's get this out of the way here. So let's take a look at how I would do this by myself. I'm in Madrid. I don't have cell service here. I can't call my help desk. So what am I going to do? I really need to get into this because I've got to get this demo going here and make sure that it works. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to log into our self-service portal. I think I've got that up and running. And while that pulls up, let me find that recovery key so I can just copy and paste here. Let's see. Oh, client. Get there. So this is kind of what the self-service portal looks like. So you can customize this. We have documentation on how to do that. If you want to have a legal notice to say, hey, make sure that you're authorized to do the recovery here, you can put that in there as well. And you'll see here up in the corner, it's using Windows Integrated Authentication. And so that's how we make it so I can't recover the CEO's computer or key using the self-service portal. So again, we make sure that you were a valid user of that machine, you've logged into that machine before, and then if I didn't, then it's not going to pull back for me. So I'll say that I accept that I understand that I need to change that text since I have no message there. We'll paste in our key here. Say get key. Make sure I put a reason. I just can't remember my passwords at all today. So we'll wait just a second. So as you guys can see while this pulls up, I mean, that was a pretty straightforward experience for an end user, right? The only thing that they need to know is where that self-service recovery portal is. So you can use a DNS alias to make this really obvious, like BitLocker Recovery, but it points at this crazy server name for App 1, blah, blah, blah. So it's pretty easy for them to go in here and figure it out. And that was kind of what our goal was with self-service. So I got my key back, luckily. So let's go do some recovery now. Oops, not a password, it's a recovery key. All right, so if I pass that in there and hit unlock, hopefully I'll have access to my drive here. And there we go. So now I'm in. So that's pretty straightforward. So if they were with the self-service recovery portal here, you know, again, if they were locked out of their machine, not even just, this was a fixed disk drive, which it obviously worked for, but if they were locked out of their actual machine as well, and in that pre-boot phase that we saw with the first demo, exact same process. They could just go in there and they'd have to write down this key and go put it in and then they'd be good to go. So what happens with this key? This was, you kind of saw this was the key to the kingdom. So, you know, I had to write this down because there's no one in this room probably that's going to be able to memorize all of this. So I wrote it down and I have it on a sticky note now and I put it on my computer because I would just want to have it handy. Well, that's kind of a bad thing, right? So what happens on the back end with the MBAM agent, and this is one of the other really big benefits of it, is that MBAM detects that that key was recovered or disclosed and we'll actually reset this. So this is kind of a one-time or a one-use, single-use key. And that helps protect your environment as well. So it's, you know, you tell a user the key and then it gets reset once they get into their machine. So that's pretty cool. All right. So that pretty much covers what we wanted to talk about in this session. So we wanted to really help you understand all the cool benefits that we had in Windows 8 and BitLocker. So we talked a lot about the pre-provisioning, which is really cool, especially if you're doing an OS migration or just any sort of imaging work. We talked about MBAM and a lot of the new features there where we have a self-service portal. You can do config manager integration, get some really great scalability. We talked about how easy it is to really implement it. I mean, this is something you could go back and set up in, you know, maybe a couple of hours as opposed to like having a year-long project. And you know, we talked about how the encryption time can be a lot faster. And then we talked through the end user experience as well, so how they can do recovery on their own, how they get a wizard that kind of helps them to become compliant and implement BitLocker. We just really wanted to see how easy it is and a lot of the improvements that we made. So I did save some time. I think we've got about 10 minutes left for questions. So we have someone in the back that's going to walk around just because otherwise I won't be able to hear you at all. And we'll take your questions. So looks like we got a couple. One sec. And also, if you don't get your question answered, then I'll just be up here, or I can go outside if we get kicked out. Hi.
So I'm wondering if there are any plans to integrate the MBAM client directly into the SCCM client.
Yeah, so it's an interesting question, and it's an interesting thought. There's a couple of challenges with that, just because we don't own the configuration manager database itself, and they get angry if we try and like insert our own stuff in there. So we'd essentially have to create like a role within configuration manager. So, you know, if you're setting up your sites in ConfigMan, you can set up like a reporting services point. That's a role for a particular server. So really, the only way we'd be able to integrate in the future, and it's definitely, you know, who knows what the future holds, but that's how we'd have to do it to be able to have that level of integration. And that way we could use the config manager client to do all of it, the key recovery, compliance reporting, et cetera. So in the future, potentially.
Hi, we've got BitLocker enabled and recovery key stored in Active Directory. Mm-hmm. Would we have to remove or turn that off if we are going to be using MBAM to issue recovery keys?
Yeah, good point. So, or good question. So with the MBAM agent, when you first install it, if you already had BitLocker installed on that machine, we'll escrow that recovery key because we can read it, it's viewable. We'll escrow that into MBAM. So the one thing that you would kind of have to be careful was you have to just let your staff know that don't go to Active Directory anymore to do recovery. Go over here. Because what's going to happen is if they start using MBAM, or some of your staff uses MBAM and some of your staff still trying to use Active Directory, we do that single-use recovery key. So they'll do recovery, and then that key is no longer valid, right? So in Active Directory, there's no new sync. And so that key is going to be different than what we're storing in MBAM now. So they may, you know, they'll go into Active Directory and say, why isn't this working, this particular key? So they just have to make sure they used to use MBAM in the end. You don't have to go in and delete those keys out of Active Directory. You can if you want. But you could just leave them there and just realize we're never going to use them again. Thanks. I can't talk too much about roadmap. The only thing I can say is that we will support Windows 8.1. MBAM 2.0 RTM will pretty much work with it out of the box today. The only change that you have to make if you want to do it manually to support it, like if you wanted to support the Windows 8.1 preview that's coming out, if you're doing the Configuration Manager integration, you just have to make a change to that MBAM supported computers query to be able to support 8.1. So it's just a version change in there. It's pretty simple. I think we're going to document it in our MBAM 2.0 release notes so that information will be there. You can just copy and paste the query into the CM collection. But other than that, with our testing, everything's worked out great. So, is there a question in the back?
How about the complexity policies for numeric BitLocker pins that was not implemented in the MBAM 1? Is there something in the two?
No, there's not. So the question was, is there any sort of pin complexity so you can enforce a particular policy just like you can with a password policy? So with the password policies, you can actually put in different group policies for the password protector that will do that, but not for the pin at this point. Okay.
Hello. Do you know if the pre-boot authentication supports validation with Active Directory credentials?
Sorry, can you say that again? Sorry, the mic keeps going out.
Okay, it's working right now. I was wondering if the pre-boot authentication supports logging on with the Active Directory user credentials instead of a PIN or a password or whatever.
So the question was, if you have a pre-boot protector, can you log in with Active Directory credentials? And the answer is no, because in that pre-boot phase, you really have no way to talk to Active Directory. There's no ties or APIs that allow you to do that. So there's no you'd have to have something that happened after pre-boot to be able to kind of maybe do single sign-on, but not really do it in that local or in that pre-boot phase.
Hi.
Over here. Sorry, I don't know where you are. Oh, sorry.
Okay, just a question. If somebody's outside of the office with no network connectivity, does this work?
Which aspect?
Recovery.
So recovery will work as long as that key was escrowed before. So we have to have that key in MBAM. And so if it was in MBAM, yeah, they don't have to be on the network for it to work.
But how does it actually work? I mean, you said that the recovery key gets reset.
Right, so it wouldn't reset until it was able to talk to the MBAM server.
Okay.
So you'd still be able to unlock it to get into your machine because that existing key already exists on the machine, but we wouldn't prevent you from fully logging into your machine until we talked to MBAM, but you wouldn't be able to get that new key escrowed. So it would create the new key, but it just wouldn't be able to escrow it until they talked to the server.
But
so you have to VPN it or something.
But how can it work if you have single sign-on and you're not able to log in?
If you have single sign-on?
To generate the self-help portal.
Well, it would use cache credentials at that point. Well, you'd have to have access to that server, right? So you'd have to either be VPN'd in to be able to access the server from that machine if you were using self-service.
Okay.
Because that's all internal to your network.
Yeah.
So you couldn't access that portal anyway unless you were VPN'd
through VPN.
In. Yeah.
But is there a way, I mean, from an administrator's perspective, if somebody needed the help, to do the recovery key for them? through the portal.
If it was a... So we don't have anything that like forces down the recovery key onto that machine, but you know, essentially you could just, you'd have to like help remote into their machine or something if it was something that was local. But you know, generally the scenario is going to be, not that I forgot my password for the fixed disk drive, it's going to be I can't get into my machine, period, because of the pre-boot, right? I'm locked out there. So there's really no way for them to remote in. You just have to tell them, hit escape, read me off the first 8 characters and whatever. Or if they had a separate, like if they had 2 devices or something, they could log in with the other device and get the key that way and then type it in on the other one.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi. How easy is it to change the encryption types? So for example, deploy in TPM only and then change to TPM plus PIN later on.
Okay, so the question is how easy is it to change protectors? So as far as like the cipher strength, let's say I was already encrypted at 128-bit and I wanted to go to 256, that requires you to decrypt and re-encrypt so that you can get the new cipher strength. But with protectors, you can add and remove those at will as long as your policy allows it, your group policy allows it. So it shouldn't be an issue there. You can remove them at any time. Next question.
It's me again.
Hi.
Hi again. So how can you ensure that a specific user has a specific access to a specific recovery key?
So how does a specific user, how do we check to see if a specific user has rights to a specific recovery key? So are you talking about the self-service portal?
Yeah.
Or the help desk portal?
Yeah, the self-service portal.
Okay, for the self-service portal, when the MBAM agent runs on the machine the first time, it's going to escrow the key and also escrow which user was logged into that machine. So that helps us to be able to determine that, hey, that user was probably a valid user since they had physical access to the machine and were able to log into it. And so then we use the Windows integrated authentication when you access the self-service portal to say, hey, Lance was a valid user of this machine. So if I log into the self-service portal and I type in someone else's recovery key and I've never logged into that machine, and it's never escrowed my information about that machine, then I won't be able to recover the key. It'll tell me that I'm an invalid user, essentially.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, Lance.
Hi.
For non-TPM based machines, can MBAM escrow the keys?
Yes. So if it's a non-TPM machine, can we escrow the keys? And yes, we can. So that's a scenario for like Windows to Go. We fully support that. Windows to Go doesn't support TPM because of, you know, it's hardware tied, and we'll just escrow the key just fine.
Well, I'm thinking more.
It does require Windows 8 though.
Yeah, but I'm thinking more of a machine that, I mean, some of our machines that we have, they don't have a TPM chip in them.
Yep.
And you know, in some particular sites, Russia, China, for example, they don't ship them with a TPM chip.
Yep.
It'll still work the same then with a hard
disk? If you use Windows 8. So
okay,
if it's Windows 7, Windows 7 does not support non-TPM machines. Windows 8 does. So you'd have to have Windows 8 on those machines.
Okay, thank
you.
Or
otherwise, MBAM wouldn't work on Windows 7. But neither would BitLocker. Question up front?
So is any user that has ever logged on to the client able to restore that key from the portal?
Yes. Yep. So they'd have to have, you know, essentially, like, physical access to that machine, first of all, to be able to get the current recovery key, and then they would be able to go into the portal at that point. But you have to have physical access and have been able to log into that machine successfully before. So that's where the Windows integrated authentication comes. Any other questions? One in the back. I think we're almost out of time here. Before you ask your question, since we've only got about 2 minutes left, I will get to it. We did give you those surveys at the beginning. If you have a couple minutes, please feel free to fill that out. That really helps us out a lot about MDOP. I think some of the young ladies in the back are taking those, so feel free to hand those. Fill them out, hand them in on your way out. Thanks. Question?
What was the reason for removing the diffuser algorithms on Windows 8? Was it performance?
Good question. I actually don't know. Sorry, I don't know. The question was, why was the diff user algorithm for AES 256 removed from Windows 8? I actually don't know the answer to that.
Yes, we have about 2,000 PCs and uh-huh. BitLocker activated. And now, once in a while, once a week, we get a pop-up that we have to put in the key. And sometimes it's when it's docked or when you put in a USB stick or something like that. Is this a no issue, or should we go to the specific vendor?
Yeah, it kind of depends on vendor. and how they do the PCR validation. So we have specific tests that we run, and sometimes, yeah, if you plug in a USB key, depending on the vendor and how they detect that, it can cause a problem. I know there was some issue with like some certain HP models a while ago where like if you docked it and then you undocked it, sometimes that had an issue. But that was more
HP.
Like a firmware. Yeah, it was more like a firmware issue. Okay. I never heard the resolution to that, but I know that the vendor was, or the customer was talking to HP about that specifically, because that was kind of outside of what we could do. Any other questions? Okay, well, I'll stay up here for a few minutes if you want to come up and ask any questions, but I really appreciate your time. Thanks, everybody.